Welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. Our host, Oscar Andermo, will together with guests share proven, tested strategies for improving your life and business. At the end of each episode, you will learn how you can use technology to implement those strategies into your daily life. We want to help you bridge the gap from inspiration to implementation.
Hello, my friend. Welcome to another episode of the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. This episode is about something very important, and that is communication. It's about how to be a better communicator and also a better public speaker. And it doesn't matter if you work as a public speaker, because I think this skill is important regardless of what you do. A couple of weeks ago, I was at a book launch with a friend, and we started to talk to one of the other guests that was at the book launch as well. And her name was Marie-Louise Seisig, and we ended up having a really long and interesting conversation. So, of course, I asked if she would be interested to be on my podcast and share some of her experience and knowledge. Marie-Louise is one of the top communication experts in Sweden and has worked with this for more than 30 years. So in this episode, you will learn a lot of tips on how to be a better communicator. So listen, learn, listen again, and then share it with a friend that you think could need some help in this area. So here we go, me and Marie-Louise Seisig.
Marie-Louise, welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast.
Thank you so much, Oscar.
Yes, so last time we met, we spoke in Swedish, but now you're in London, so it's good, we can shift to English.
Yeah.
So, I like to start with this question just to understand a little bit what you're doing now. So you pretend that you and me, we are in Dubai, we're going up to a sky bar, and there's a third guy in the lift, and he asks, so Marie-Louise, what do you actually do?
I'm a trainer in public speaking, body language, rhetoric. That's it. One sentence.
Yeah, excellent. That's the perfect elevator pitch.
Yes, it is. But how many levels were it?
It's a tall building, so you still have some time.
Okay.
But the elevator is fast.
Okay. Then I also can say that my background is that I'm an opera singer and a singing teacher. So I'm coming from the stage. I'm not an academic person, but I'm a very practical person. Hands-on.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. So that's what I wanted to start with, your background as an opera singer. How did you get into opera, being an opera singer?
Oh, you know, I've always been singing, and it was the easiest way to get an education and so. And not so easy. You have to test to get applied for education. And also work in Stora Teatern in Gothenburg, the opera house in Gothenburg. And it was about 200 persons that was trying to get in, and there were only 4 places, and I got one.
Uh-huh.
So you really have to have a good day when you wake up. Mm-hmm. Nothing can go wrong when you're singing to apply for a service in an opera house. So,
how many years did you work as an opera singer?
It was 5 years at Stora Teatern.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I'm also a singing teacher. So I was training children and adults in a music school in Stockholm, and also piano and choir and so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I believe you started your company, was it 1989?
I started 1986.
Okay.
And then I quit the job at Stora Teatern in 1989.
And when you left the 1989, was it to work with communication? Or what was it that you started in 1989?
Yes, okay. It was. Yeah. Yeah. And it actually started a little bit with Lars-Erik Unestål.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I was in some training with him, and I read a lot about mental training and so. And I tried to get that into the Stora Teatern, but I was so much early. So they didn't know anything about that, and they didn't understand what I was talking about. And then I was not so trained in argumentation and so. I think if it has been with my knowledge now, I could have put it another way so they should understand what it was all about.
Okay, excellent.
So I've listened a lot to Lars-Erik Unestål when I was trying to säga upp sig.
To resign. Yeah, to get the courage to do it. Or?
To get the courage. Okay, that's excellent. Right. Okay, that's excellent. Right. Yeah. Every day I listen to the tapes.
Okay, excellent. So yeah, Unestål has been 3 times on this podcast, and I'm a big fan of his mental training. So
yeah,
it's nice to hear. He had so much influence in Sweden. There's so many people that have been listening to his voice over the years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He was a pioneer.
Actually, we did a training in Örebro, where he lives, for mental training for singers. Mm-hmm. But that was a couple of years after I had resigned from Stora Teatern. So now I think it's very, very common that also singers and actors are using mental training. Not only athletes and so.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, he worked with a lot of different musicians. When you left 1989, what was kind of the first things you did outside of the opera? Like, what do you remember your first jobs that you got?
Yes, absolutely. I was a trainer at Friskis and Svettis. Like workout.
Okay.
Excellent. Yeah, and they asked me. They knew what I was doing as a job. So they asked me to give a speech and a lecture about voice and about having stage fright and breathing and so, because they thought that it was so difficult to address the participants with their voices and so. And that was my first speech or lecture about voice and breathing and being on a stage. Mm-hmm. And in Friskis and Svettis, there are different people with different employments. So they started to ask me, oh, you must come to us, and you must come to us, and can you do this at my job? And so that's how it all started. And then I worked some years parallel with my job at Stora Teatern, and then I had so many demands on being in their companies. So when I got my second child, I resigned from Stora Teatern.
Okay. And do you remember that feeling when you took the step and resigned?
Yeah.
That day?
Yeah. It was so difficult to make that decision, because when you're an artist, that's your big love and that's the air that you breathe. But I've never stopped teaching singing. So I've always had singing pupils at the side of my consultants.
Okay. Yes.
And also, I play the piano. Now I'm doing art. But when I had some years, I've had so much to do all over Sweden and the Nordic countries, also in Europe and so. And then I hadn't time to do my artistic work. That was not good. And I had a span of 10 years with really, really, really good business. And then when you realize my art, that was, so in 2008, I stopped work so hard with my consulting and started to paint, and also started to have more singing pupils.
To have some balance.
And after that, I have had a 50-50 with my artwork. But you know, it's not so different to be on a stage singing opera or being on a stage giving a speech. So that's also very artistic. And I think that being on a stage giving a speech is in the art business. It's not in the academic business.
It's art. Okay.
Yeah. So I teach about the rules of the stage and how you react when you are entering the stage and have a full audience. And that's exactly the same that if you have an opera performance, or if you're giving a concert or whatever. So,
I read on your website that you work with a lot of like executive top management teams, for example. And how would you bring what would they say when you say like, this is how we do it in the opera, and this is what translates to the boardroom or to the,
I'm saying that you have different ways of presenting yourself, because a lot of people say that I have to be myself. I will not be an actor or do a play or whatever. And then I say, every person has the ability to be engaged, to be happy, to have a lot of energy, to have a lot of knowledge. And I say, you must put that side in front when you are entering the stage or the boardroom or in the politics. And so you are not going to be someone else, mm-hmm. but you're going to take the person that gives you the most benefit in this specific situation. And that's the art of stage. When the curtain is going up, you must be that character that the play is saying that you should be. And that's the same when you are at the board meeting or at the stage giving a speech. You must be that character. You are not going to be someone else. You are going to be the character inside yourself that's most beneficial for you at a specific moment.
Okay, for the situation, So I was thinking we can start a little bit broad and then go down a little bit deeper. But like personal communication and like giving the first impression and communication in general, what are like some biggest challenges and the biggest problems that you see when you've been out? I mean, you've been working with all kinds of people in this field. So what are some of the challenges that you see?
I think the biggest challenge is for people to change their mindset, to be more aware of the audience than be aware of themselves or their PowerPoint. It's the biggest challenge is for people to not using PowerPoint all the time. And it's me and my computer, and there is an audience somewhere, but it's me and my computer like this. That's a safety zone, me and my computer. But the most challenging thing is to have a black screen and address the audience, say, welcome, lovely to see you, or whatever. And focus more on the audience than on yourself.
I gave a talk on Wednesday actually, I had a PowerPoint that I was doing, and then in the middle it crashed. So
good,
like it stopped. And maybe five six years ago I would have panicked and would have been like standing by the computer like this. But now I had a whiteboard, so I could just like ask the technician, can you look at this, and then I continue with the whiteboard. But that's because I've been doing it for many times, but a couple of years ago I definitely would have panicked instead of focusing on the audience, interacting with the audience.
Your best friend, I say, is you use a clicker like this, and that is the black button here. That's your best friend. Use it several times and address. You don't have to write welcome on the PowerPoint. You're going to say welcome. And so there's so many unnecessary bullshit on the person's PowerPoint.
When I started speaking, the PowerPoint was sometimes more for me than for the audience, because remember the structure, like I could see this is where I am,
but that's the same thing as if you are reading a book and you are listening to the audiobook at the same time. So the audience are not interested in your manuscript. And that's, the manuscript is one thing, and the inspiration for the audience, the visual inspiration, that's completely different things.
I started speaking professionally 10 years ago, and in the beginning I was giving talks about Dubai, the history of Dubai. And I think I was maybe not so professional, of course, the first time, so I didn't know. And then I had my manuscript was my PowerPoint, but yeah, that's I guess not the best way to do it.
No, it's not. So that's also challenging, to make people write their special manuscript. And I really like these manuscript cards like this. And then you can walk around, and you can go out to the audience, and and then you have this clicker with you.
When I started around 2015, 2016, I started taking out groups to the desert in Dubai, outside of Dubai, to give talks in the desert. And then I couldn't do a PowerPoint. So then in the first times I had the cards, actually. And again, it was just so I could keep track of where I was in my presentation. It gave me kind of some kind of confidence, like 5-6 years ago. Interesting.
So that's really important. The PowerPoint is not your manuscript. It's the audience has no interest in seeing your manuscript.
Okay, so we talk about rhetoric, voice, and body language written on your website. And so a little bit about rhetoric. Aristoteles, or what is rhetoric?
It's a very old knowledge. It's from Aristotle, like 300 years before Christ. And it's interesting because when they started to analyze what actually is it that makes people believe in what you are saying, they were a lot into the psychology of human beings. And psychology was invented as a subject several hundred years after rhetoric. So psychology was a helping tool for rhetoricians, or what you say. And you have three different kinds of speeches, you can say. It's they call it the genius, I think. And it's about the speech that was in the past time, that the speeches of law, and then the speeches on the present time, that is the speeches when you are having birthdays or giving a thank you, or it's a funeral. It's what's happening right now in the present, the past, the present, and then the speeches about the future. Genus deliberativum, when you speak pro and contra. And that is the selling, you are going to sell something, or it's from the politician speech that you're going to give the promise about, if you put the vote on me, I will promise you to, but you know. So that's only the three different kind of speeches in the rhetoric. The pastime, the law, the speeches, justice, and so you're accusing someone about something, and then they have to defend themselves. And then the present speaking about giving thank you or celebrations, and so. And then the future about selling something. If you buy this, I promise that you will. Or politicians, if you vote for me, I promise you. So the most things that we do in the business and the corporate world is the future speeches, and a little bit about the past. It's more economics, They have their annual reports and so. And then you also can mix these three in one speech, of course.
Okay.
And yeah.
And so one of my favorite speakers is a guy called Jim Rohn that you maybe heard of. He says the promise of the future is an awesome force.
Yeah.
So if you want to do an inspirational talk about the future, what are some key things that you should put on there?
Yeah. I think, and I've really thought this over a lot, because some years ago, everybody was talking about storytelling, and also now. And of course, I do storytelling and I teach about storytelling, but only, as can I say, only having storytelling as your tool makes you weak and makes what you say not reliable to 100%, because I'm telling a story. Tomorrow I tell another story, and I would change the story. So this story is better than the story I told yesterday. You know, you can tell whatever you want in a story. So I'm forcing really my audience or students or what you say to do argumentation. And that's a lot more difficult. You have to work a lot more. But when you have really good arguments about the thing, then you are strong. But you really must think over what is it that you are argumentating about. And what are the arguments? Is it the truth? Is it, can my audience listen to this? Can they take the argument to themselves? Do I believe in my argument? And the most important thing, can I put out some proof about the truth in this argumentation? So it's a lot more work, but when you have really good arguments about the topic, then you are very, very strong. And of course, you can have a short part of storytelling and so as a proof. But when you only have storytelling as your tool, then you're so weak.
So you need to mix it with the, okay.
Yeah.
So and one of the sales trainings that I did, I think long time ago, like 15 years ago, one of the first sales trainings that I did, they talked about these facts and emotions, that, and then most decisions are like 90% emotions. We think it's fact, but it's actually emotions.
Yeah.
So how do you elicit emotions in these talks? Like how do you get emotions in your audience, or even if it's a small boardroom or if a big talk?
Yeah. Actually, you can't speak without an emotion, and then you, if you are emotionless, you are a psychopath, you know. So
which may be in some of the boardrooms, but
yeah,
that's another story.
And you know, I do the argumentation according to Aristotle, and he has three kinds of arguments. And one is the logic, and that's figures, economics, science, statistics, and so. And the other one is ethics. My proposition has to be beneficial for the community or for other people in a broader perspective. And then the third and the most important argument is the one of the heart. Yeah, you must feel something about this. It can be pro or contra. And you must really think about the feeling inside people that this proposition make. So that's the three kind of arguments.
Is the ethos, logos, pathos.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, it's very interesting because you can make these ethos and pathos arguments look like logos, because you can find the surveys and the statistics and the science and so about environment, for example, or for law. The law is about how to live together and not shooting or embarrassing or whatever. And now there are also a topic called health economics. So, because health is about pathos, it's about your inner feelings. And now you can find economic figures about health. So you can make every kind of these three arguments looking like logos.
Mm.
Perfect.
So if you would think of a great speaker or a great talk that uses all this in a good way, do you have any like favorite? Like one can maybe watch on YouTube or like Martin Luther King's talk, there's a lot of people talking about. Or...
Oh, that was almost only emotions.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a dream. Dream is inside here, and it's a vision. Yeah. And he painted up the feeling about living equally, side by side. I think here in Sweden we have Anders Hansen.
Oh, okay, Anders Hansen. Yeah.
He's a medicine doctor. And talks about the brain and so. He's a really good speaker.
Interesting. He's really trendy now. He's one of the top speakers, I guess.
Absolutely.
Really well. Anders, if you're listening to this, I want you on the podcast. So,
but yeah,
I would love to interview him actually.
Yeah, he's really using his visual, his PowerPoints brilliantly.
Okay, excellent. So probably most of the talks are in Swedish, but you can search for Anders Hansen and maybe there's something in English as well.
Yeah, and of course, Hans Rosling.
His talks are in English, and for the listeners outside of Sweden, if you haven't watched Hans Rosling, that's a must.
And his speech about the magic washing machine. I think that was in Qatar, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe, I'm not sure, but that's brilliant, I've seen several of his.
It's 10 minutes of pure excellence.
Amazing, like having a professor like that, you know, because sometimes academic talks can be quite boring, just logos, you know.
And no emotions whatsoever. And they have their back and just only writing on their whiteboard or whatever. Yeah, but Hans Rosling, it's a must. And that's a female speaker on. I look a lot at TED. .com and her name is Kelly McGonigal.
Okay.
Yeah, and she is brilliant on the stage, and she engages with the audience, and she's very relaxed and so much knowledge. I think she talks about I don't know, some hormones or like that. It's very interesting.
Okay, so we'll put a note to that, a link to that in the show notes. I'm not familiar with her, so I'd love to.
And I do a list at the end of my speeches.
With a few recommendations.
And also a person that is very good storytelling is Brené Brown. The Power of Vulnerability.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great speech.
And, it's a TED talk as well, or
it's a TED talk. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
And she's a really good storyteller, and she says that also in the start, that I'm a storyteller. So that's good. And Kelly McGonigal and Tim. I have them here at my I can give you the list.
And I'll put it in the show notes. That would be
Because I have it, I can just send it to you. So
excellent. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, and they are so inspirational. And I think to watch a talk like this before you're entering the stage gives you energy and power and so I think sometimes I say find the music a tune that gives you energy and happiness and and so, but I think also these really good TED talks.
So the talk I gave 2 days ago was about creativity and innovation, and one big part of that's is about Medici effect. I don't know if you heard about this. It's a Swedish guy called Franz Johansson. He wrote this book a couple of years ago, and he's a great speaker as well. So on the way to my talk, where I included a lot of his material, I was listening to a podcast and he was interviewed.
Good
inspiration. So.
Yes, and exactly as Lars-Erik Unestål says, you have to help yourself get in the right mood.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you have it all inside of you. Yeah. But sometimes you have another mood in the front here. So you must help yourself to put the right persona in front.
So you mentioned past, present, future. Do you think a good talk includes a little bit of all three? Or
yes, yeah. I think the past, present, and future, that's one of my quick fix structures, and you can put them in what way you like. I'm now working with a VD. What is that in English?
A CEO. Yeah.
A CEO. Yeah. Ambush,
on the list.
Top CEO. And she's doing an investment round. And she has first future, then past, and last the present.
Interesting.
That's interesting because. The on the stock market, they want to know, is it safe to invest in this company? So what are our goals? What are what is our challenges? And what is the market? And what's the trends? And so it's about the future. And how does this specific company address this future problems or whatever challenges? And then about the past. We have conquered these challenges in the past, and then we did it like this and so, and this is our gross market or everything, and right now we are here, we are going to blah blah blah. So I think that's very interesting. Start with the future, because this is very important. If you're always starting with the past, then you always sometimes get stuck in the past, because you know the past. It's easy to say what has happened, but to say what is going to happen is much more difficult. And that's why if you have a speech of 15 minutes, don't start with the past, because the risk is that you are getting stuck in the past. And then it's only 5 minutes to the most interesting thing, that's what is going to happen. So I think this starting with the future and then the past and then the present or whatever.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, you can
explain. And I have also another quick fix, and that is that you can integrate the global, Europe, and here in Sweden, or Sweden, this region, and our company. Yeah, you can have geographic the past, the future, that's the timeline. And you can also integrate the geographic. Globally, we can see, and here in Europe, but in Sweden, or in Sweden, we la la la, and here in Stockholm, da di di. But here it's our company, or in our company, and this apartment, and it's our workplace. You can,
Interesting. That's great. Before we move over to voice, Any other quick tips on dealing with stage, what do you call stage fright, or being nervous before you talk, you know?
Yeah.
I think you have a lot of those.
Yes. Yeah, I have a great tip. And that is focus on the audience, not on yourself. And the first thing that you are going to do when you open your mouth on the stage is ask the audience something. Yeah. But it must be a little bit relevant. And it can also be, welcome everybody. I'm so wondering, what was it that made you come here today? Like that. Or I'm so wondering what you are expecting from this speech, or something that has to do with the audience. So you as a speaker must look more at the audience and be more interested in the audience than the audience is in you. That's the golden key to getting the audience in your hand. Be more interested. Yeah.
I can tell you from my own experience that 100% has worked for me as well. So when I started speaking maybe 10 years ago, the first 5, 10, 15 minutes, sometimes I was still in this, I was not getting into the flow state. I was still a bit nervous and like the voice was trembling and these things. Mm. But maybe the last 5 years, I started doing this in Dubai actually, that I get the audience to stand up and do a fake smile like this. They say like a Unistop thing, right? If you fake smile like this, he says, put a pen like this, you know? And then look at each other and everyone starts smiling and laughing.
Yeah.
And when I start this, all the nervousness from my, because I'm focusing on them and everyone is, and then I say, everyone is smiling towards me. Yeah. So it's a good feeling for me as well.
Yeah,
so,
that's great. That's great.
Yeah, but this thing, focusing on the audience, I know it. My experience is that 100% that this has worked for me, actually.
Yeah. Do you know how I start my speeches? Mm-hmm. I always have music in the room. And everybody, they're jazzing. So my absolutely first sentence is, did you notice that there was music in the room when you arrived?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then I asked, how did that make you feel? And then I always said, happy, relaxed, welcoming, and so. And then I put a PowerPoint and like this with a sheet of music, a very difficult music sheet. And I said, what would you have had the same feeling if I just had this music sheet on the PowerPoint and no music? And of course not. And I said, what is the link between the notes and the music? And that's the musician.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I start about, now we're going to talk about you as a musician on your knowledge.
Yeah, that's a great way of starting.
Yeah.
Also and, goes back to your background, you know.
Yeah. And then my last picture is, it's also about the music. It's everything is in the notes, but not the most important thing. Mm. And that's how to play the notes, of course.
Excellent. So last week when I was giving a talk, I noticed in the morning I had a little bit of a cold and my voice was like a little bit like this, and I was like, oh shit, in 2 hours I'm giving a talk, voice. So any opera singing advice on getting your voice ready?
well,
dream of it.
Yes, I think, especially in the mornings, you have to do a little bit of a warm-up of your voice. And that begins with a warm-up of your body. And then a little warm-up of your breathing, just get in contact with your body in any way, some stretching or whatever. You have to have the spirit's moving. And then if you're really closed in your throat, I think there is almost always a part of your vocal cords that is working, and find that, and then you can do that with a glissando, like that, and then you maybe find that here it is working, then it's nothing, so then you have to talk at this part, mm-hmm. yeah, of your vocal cords that is working, mm-hmm. and of course have some support from your muscles, mm-hmm. in the torso, in the belly, or so. That's a lot of training to manage that, but do mm-hmm. some warm-ups.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, you can just take a random book and read some text, like I'm just nå fram med rätt undertext. Undertexter är det, with a little bit more open throat, more open mouth, more open bihålor, vad heter det, sinus? Mm. Yeah, like this, like the echo in your head. So don't make the room for your voice small, mm-hmm. and closed and pressed, open up, and you try, Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome everybody.
Welcome everybody.
Yeah.
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 I feel shy now. I'll practice.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that stupid?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everybody, you can just say your name. Mm. Oscar Andermo.
Oscar Andermo.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because when you're opening here and opening here and opening here, your voice is becoming more relaxed. Of course. Yes. And not like this or like this.
Yeah. So when you do your talks, would you do a warm-up regardless of how you're feeling before? Would you do a vocal warm-up? Or?
Yes, if I'm going to speak for a very, very big audience, like several hundred. Mm. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you have the microphone. No, because you have to have a very good voice anyhow.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's your small pressed voice that is getting bigger.
Mm.
Yeah. So yes, I do. But, you know, voice, managing my voice is my work.
Yeah.
Since I was 15 years old.
Yeah. And I think you have some more tips on this in your book, right? So we can give a link to the book after also. Mm. So. The next one. So normally when you're at a party and you meet a dentist, you get a bit conscious about your teeth. And when I met you like 2-3 weeks ago and you said you're a body language expert or work with body language, then of course you get a little bit, and sometimes I slump a little bit like this. So I asked about how to, you know. So body language, how does it affect the talks, your body language?
Very, very much.
Yeah.
And also, I'm going to take off my glasses now, because also your eyes affect your voice and your facial expression. Because now I'm in a, how do you say, sending mode. But when I'm sitting on my computer, I'm like this. So, right here. And if I'm going with this, me and my computer, or me in my text mode, it's like this. And this is also affecting my voice. You can hear it's more like a line, and it's not so much melody, and it's not so much volume. So just being active in your face gives you a better voice. And of course,
you said to have lift your chest. Yeah,
yes,
to have
it, your. Exactly. This is a happy dot on your chest. You say it at the theater, and you must lift up your happy dot. Mm. And when you do that, you see try that with the audience when you have done this.
To do this one as well.
Yeah. I say this, that all the actors all over the world learn how to lift up your chest, make room for your heart and your personality. When you say, I am, you say, I am. Mm. You don't say, I am. I am. Yeah. So this is also very important. And it's here that people look at you. So,
Interesting. Yeah, that's something everyone can practice at home. And if you're listening, it's basically point on your chest and just lifting that up and taking your shoulders back.
Back a little bit, yeah. Because you're sitting like this a lot. Of the time of the day. Also, when you're walking, make this happy dot going in advance.
But as a guy, it cannot be too cocky or.
Yeah, it must not be in a tensional way this. No.
Then you get challenged to someone.
No. It's from the inside.
Okay, interesting. So 2020, everyone moved from live meetings to digital meetings, Zoom and Team, and now we're in the hybrid space. So some people are there and some people are on Zoom or Teams. So any advice on giving a talk over Zoom or Teams in a good way?
Yeah, put your computer in a high way so you can look at the green dot or whatever and not looking down. It's awful, you know, when you see, I've seen it a lot when I can try it here like this. Helvete nu då. So
like, you learn some Swedish swear words.
Yeah, you know.
So you're looking down on the computer.
Having the computer like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awful. Yeah.
I actually have a standing setup at home, so I stand when I.
And also the background, of course.
And
I'm at my daughter's place, and we were looking. What room is the best? They have local stuff all over the place.
I used to have a hook here in the background. It was here because we had a painting here. And then I gave a training a couple of months ago, and I asked for feedback after, and one comment was, I was so annoyed with your hook, so I had to take the hook down. And now it's just the white background.
And tell about your bookshelf with all the books.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, I done a lot of videos in my old apartment in Dubai, and I had my bookshelves behind me, and I was so proud of my books. But some people don't like it, and especially my wife, because they were not in order. My wife was, I cannot focus on you. I just focus on the books and I want to put them in order. So, we need to be careful with the background, I guess.
And also, I think that you should have a little bit clean space around you. And of course, put all these devices on mute. Because all the clutter around you stresses your mind, and also a little bit about the lighting.
So those things, plus all the other things that we already talked about, I think becomes even more important when you do it like this.
And also always try to get the audience to be active. Use the breakout rooms and have some prepared questions to ask and make the audience work. But don't let them be passive. Well, that's terrible.
So
then they start to like this, like this. So.
No, it's very easy when you're looking at the computer because just one click away is maybe your work email or maybe something else. So
there's nothing that acute, vad heter det, that
emergency or
like, emergent, emergent that you have to deal with it. So, and that's the speaker's mission, to have the audience be present. That's not the audience work. That's you as a speaker must always make the audience present. And it goes like this. So never make it like this. Always have it. Always have to put in energy, interesting questions, make them talk to each other, make them do something physical, like you did, very good. And so that's the speaker's mission.
To manage the energy of the room.
Yeah, always, until the end.
Okay. So, one of the things that I talk about is the future and technology and a little bit how we can deal with all this rapid change. And, and now we see, the teenagers today with social media, there's a lot people are on the phone like this and maybe not interacting with people. So these things that you talk about, how do you see it for the next generation with this all this new technology, and what do we do about it?
Well, what are we going to do about it? The social media, it's hijacking our brains. So I think we have to hijack them back by... It's so difficult, and this Anders Hansen talks about this, and you just have to put it off. I think, and some really strange and sad thing is, I've read a lot about body language, and when you are uplifted like this, and looking up and looking straight forward and going up, it's much easier for you to get the positive pictures in your brain. And when you are in the downway mode and looking down like this, it's much easier for the brain to get the bad pictures and the sad pictures and the sad mood. This is the depressive mode of a human being, for God's sake. And when you see everybody, on a tube station, so it's like this. It's a depressive mode for everybody, and I almost cry when I see it. And I say, raise up, lift up your chest, your chin, your eyes.
No, I think we all need to balance it a little bit, turn it off. Turn it off sometimes, leave it, and just focus on the person in front of you. And communication, these things that you were talking about. It's very important.
It's very important. And nowadays, some young people, they don't dare having a phone conversation. They just do the SMS.
Texting. So you've been running your company since 1989, or even before that, I think.
Even before,
So... any advice for entrepreneurs, maybe especially like consultants? I know a lot of speakers and trainers and coaches that listen to this podcast. So any advice for them?
Don't take everything that money that gets in your company as a salary. No.
Leave some in the business for rainy day.
It's very tempting to take everything. It's very expensive to take out a salary, especially in Sweden. So leave something there for the bad days.
For a pandemic, for example.
Yeah, I've been through several ups and downs, and I've always had some money in the company that I save for the bad times. So don't be tempted to or to get the fanciest office or whatever. Mm-hmm. The fanciest you can do is being out with your customers. Yeah. And the office is not important at all, actually, I think. Yeah. And nowadays you can hire an office or a meeting place. Mm. So really think about, because if you're one person, really think about what you spend the money on.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I think, 2020 was a tough year for a lot of consultants, including me.
So yeah,
that's I think good advice to when you have the good times, don't spend it all.
So no, don't spend it all.
Keep
don't
your costs low still.
Mm. And be out where there are people.
Mm.
Don't sit inside and don't do everything on LinkedIn or whatever. Be out in live in the elevator pitch or go to meetings and lunches and breakfast meetings and so.
Mm.
Talk about your business with a warm heart and a lot of generosity. Mm. And also say always over a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, don't be so greedy to put on the invoice, the parking space or la 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 or whatever. No, be generous, deliver a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been successful for me. Also, I've raised my, paid for my children. As a single mom.
Yeah, excellent. You've been doing it for a long time, exactly.
Yeah.
I know a lot of consultants last year that had to give up their dream. So we're coming to the end of the show. So your book in Swedish is Kliv fram, ta plats, tala.
Yes, actually my daughter had one.
Oh, excellent, yeah. But so I was thinking, how does it sound in English? So it's step forward... And then take a seat, Google Translate,
step forward, take your place and speak.
Because the Google Translate, when you just put Google Translate, it actually becomes take a seat. Take a seat. No, that's not what she means. Take space or take your place in the world.
Take your place,
But there's no English book at the moment. There's only a Swedish version.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we'll put a link to, I think you can buy it from your website.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'll put a link there.
Send me an email or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have one last question. If you had a magic wand and you could teach something about communication to everyone in the world, what would you teach them?
Ah, be present. Mm. Really work with your brains. Ability to pop here and there and see and like this. So just really train your brain to be here and now. And perfect. And that's about listening, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So listening is the first step to be a good communicator. Mm. And just focus on the person or the persons that you have in front of you and really listen to understand.
Mm.
And that's different to listen to just reply.
Yeah.
Because it takes in average 3 seconds when you're listening to a person that tells you something that you start here to think about your own experience about what the other person is talking about.
Mm.
So just to listen really, really, really in a present way. Mm. Oh, I think the world would be a better place.
Excellent. So we're, for the listener, wherever you are in the world, be there, be present and listen with the intention to understand. Thank you so much. Yeah. Do you have anything else to share before we end it?
No, get out, get to the opera, concert houses, theaters, paint, do some art. I think that's very, if you have a pencil in your hand, you can't start a fight.
That's a good one. It's a perfect way to end it. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Pleasure. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you.
So there we go. Lots of interesting tips and tricks from Marie-Louise. And some of these things are things that I will use and implement in my career as a public speaker. And I hope you found some tips valuable as well. If you are Swedish, her book, you can find her book on her website, and I'll put the link on the show notes to this episode. Also, she shared a couple of TED Talks that she recommends that she really likes. Those can also be found in the notes to this episode. As always, subscribe to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. And if you like this episode, I appreciate if you can share it with a friend or two, and also maybe write a nice review on iTunes. This helps me to grow this podcast. And you can also follow me on Strategic Tech Coaching on Instagram, where I share stories and try to inspire and also have some fun sometimes on Instagram. So I hope to see you somewhere in the world. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast with your host, Oscar Andermo. We'll catch you next time.